Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Breaking news, at least one, perhaps two bombs, rocked government buildings in central Oslo a couple of hours ago. We should say explosions.
Now, why did all this happen? A lot of different theories.
Nobody did claim responsibility yet.
Well, still unclear whether it was indeed a bomb, whether this was intentional, whether this is some kind of explosion that is rooted in some accident, gas explosion, etc.
Sure. It's too early to tell, of course, who is behind this.
Explosions.
A lot of different theories.
Nobody did claim responsibility.
Too early to tell if this is just speculation.
Pure speculation at this moment.
And now we're getting word that a gunman disguised as a police officer has shot several people at a summer camp outside of Oslo. So this is a situation of utter chaos that is unfolding right now in Norway's capital city. That powerful explosion
that
is said to have put
that lipstick off my show. Shut her mouth.
So the Muslims attack in Norway, and the vermin in the American media say they don't know who did it. They don't know who did it. They have no idea. They thought it was a gas pipe explosion or the summer heat. Perhaps it was a shipment of lentils from Hungary. Anything but the Islam word. You can't say that, after all. You'd be considered non-multicultural. You might offend the New World Order. We know who did it, of course. We know exactly who did it. Everyone knows who did it by now. Everyone knows it except ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox News. They, of course, don't know. 30 children dead. One of the vermin went to a summer camp for Norwegian kids on a little island and opened fire on the unarmed children and shot them. The children were jumping into a cold bay to get away from the vermin, but he kept shooting. And that's, of course, because guns are not allowed in Norway. You understand that guns are only for the American West, the John Wayne type, the George Bush right-wing American is the gun-obsessed. Of course, if they had a few guns, maybe they would have shot the perpetrator, but this is the Quisling moment. This is Norway's 9/11. Today, Norway came under a massive terrorist attack. The Prime Minister's office bombed in the capital. It looks like 9/11. Seven people were killed at the same time, a shooting at a youth camp, and as many as 30 children killed. And though the left-wing media in this country refused to admit it, this was clearly an act of radical Muslim terrorism. Even the far-left Guardian newspaper in England said that in terms of suspects, the most obvious conclusion would be a jihadist group. But why Norway? Norway is seen as a soft target compared to the United States and the United Kingdom, which have already experienced similar attacks. Also, Norwegian newspapers reprinted the series of Danish cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad. And last week, a Norwegian prosecutor filed terror charges against an Iraqi-born cleric for threatening to kill Norwegian politicians if they dare deport him back to his hellhole. And he warned Norway they would pay a high price. Now, you need to know that Norway, like the United States, has an immigration problem. Pakistani Norwegians are the largest non-European minority group in Norway. Did you know that? Pakistani Norwegians. And most of their 31,000 members live around Oslo. The Iraqi immigrant population has increased significantly in recent years. Why did they come to Norway? Because of Norway's cradle-to-grave welfare state, fueled by the country's massive oil wealth. Norway has one of the best and most generous welfare systems in the world. Did you know that new parents are entitled to 12 months off from work with 80% pay or 10 months with full pay? Now, of course, since most Norwegians just have sex and don't have children, the new parents are generally immigrants who have 8, 10, 12, 14 children and don't work. All Norwegians, including illegal immigrants, enjoy full health care, free educational benefits throughout their lives. Exactly what Obama wants for America. So you can imagine what a paradise and what a target it must seem like to a radical Muslim. Now, what effect has this had on Norway? This has brought radical when I say what has this immigration had on Norway is the question. It's brought radical Jew hatred, for one. Did you know that Norway's a center for anti-Semitism? Did you know that in 2010, the Norwegian Broadcasting Corporation reported that anti-Jewish attitudes were prevalent at some Norwegian schools? Teachers at schools with large shares of Muslims revealed that some Muslim students often praise or admire Adolf Hitler because of his killing of Jews. And that some Muslim children laugh or demand teachers stop when trying to educate about the Holocaust. This is Norway's Quisling moment. Now, why do I say that? You've heard the word Quisling. He's a Quisling, I say sometimes, about sellouts here in this country. But what does Quisling mean? Well, Quisling was a man. His name was Vidkun Quisling. He was a Norwegian politician who, during the time that Norway was occupied by Nazi Germany, he seized power in a Nazi-backed coup. And from 1942 to 45, Quisling served as president of Norway, and he worked with the Nazis. The collaborationist government participated in Germany's final solution. Quisling was put on trial during the post-war legal purge in Norway and found guilty of charges including embezzlement, murder, and high treason, and was executed by firing squad at the end of the war. But Quisling's name became a synonym for a traitor. But you see, the new Quislings are of a different sort. They open Norway's doors to massive immigration from the Middle East. They spew hatred against the state of Israel. And today's tragic massacres are the inevitable result. Norway's 9/11 could have been stopped, but it grew far too long, nourished by the bile of Eurosocialism. I hope that one day incidents like this will lead Europeans to come to the defense of their own civilizations and clamp down on the hate and intolerance that takes perverse advantage of European tolerance and openness. And what is Obama talking about now? The debt ceiling. The debt ceiling. Would you like to talk about Norway's Quisling moment? Let me tell you something. You won't believe what I'm about to read you. Here is what the justice minister said after the bombings in Norway today. He said, our answer is more democracy, more openness, to show that we will not be stopped by this kind of violence. See the liberalism mental disorder? Instead of cracking down and saying we're going to investigate the Muslim community, we're going to get to the bottom of them, we'll overturn every stone until we find the web. No, they want more democracy, more openness. I think what the Norwegians really ought to do is close down the few remaining churches, because, let's face it, a cross is an affront to have any reference to their historical past, because that unto itself shows an insult to Islam. In order to be tolerant, the Norwegians should erase all of their history. In fact, if the Norwegians really wanted to show tolerance and openness, I suggest they eliminate the Norwegian language. And they study Arabic, and they teach Arabic, and make Arabic the official language of Norway. Because that way the newcomers will feel, let us say, welcome. And of course they could give their daughters over to them. Not that there's a shortage of them willing to throw themselves at their feet. But they could give their daughters over to them. No one's calling on this because your mind is on the heat and the air conditioners and the thieves robbing the copper. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's play some. A whole lot of shaking going on. We're open for business. It's open mic to mic on the Savage Nation.
Come on over, baby. A whole lot of shaking going on. Yes, I say, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking. A whole lot of shaking going on. Well, I say, come on over, baby. We got chicken in the corner.
Glass strewn everywhere on the street. You see people sort of, I imagine, walking shocked after this explosion, possibly a second one as well. The Royal Ministry in Oslo is reported to be on fire.
Everything sort of to the college girls. So the Muslims have given Norway their 9/11. They've rewarded them for their tolerance, openness, attacks on the Jews, attacks on Israel. No matter what the Norwegians did, it wasn't enough for the radical Muslims. Bring in, you know, bring more of them in, as I say. Bring in more. In fact, they should close down all the churches in Norway so that the Muslims don't feel offended by Christianity. I mean, that cross does offend them. And the Norwegian language unto itself, as I say to you, is an offense to Muslims. They should learn Arabic and they should ban Norwegian. They're phasing out over a 10-year period. Norwegian not allowed to be spoken in Norway in order to not offend the Muslims. And that way, perhaps they'll stop bombing. Well, if they bomb along the way, they'll understand why, because they're still speaking Norwegian and there are some churches with crosses. Some people refuse to give up Christianity and therefore the bombs must continue to go off. It's no different here. Do you think this country's any different than Norway? You saw the DHS film that just came out? Did you see the DHS movie that just came out on terrorism by Big Sis, the enemy of the American people? Big Sis put out a DHS movie that showed the white male as the enemy. The white male was the terrorist. And heroes? Anyone but the white male. They show a well-dressed black male pointing out a suspicious white man in a pickup truck and reporting him to the Department of Homeland Security. You have no idea what's happened to you under Obama. You have no idea that you've lost your freedom and your country. You don't understand this. There's so much more to be said. I've said it in so many books. We're talking about Norway's 9/11. We're talking about the shooting of 30 children by a Muslim, a fanatic. Well, it's an extremist. There really isn't anything against Islam or the Muslim religion. Because we all know by now that Islam is a religion of peace and all Muslims come here to work and support society. And therefore, we shouldn't jump to conclusions. We must not jump to conclusions. I would say the only solution is to bring in more Muslims and I would say more mosques. In other words, you take a guy like Bloomberg. Now, there's a man, first a Democrat, then a Republican, now God knows what. Bloomberg in New York, he's for the Ground Zero Mosque because it's tolerant and it's open-minded. And it shows that we're a democracy. It doesn't show that we're weak in any way. In fact, it shows that we're strong. More mosques mean we're stronger, right? More Middle Easterners means we're even stronger. In fact, more bombs going off would show that we're even more tolerant. Because we can tolerate the bombs without cracking down on them, you see. That shows real tolerance. And that's why I say liberalism is a mental disorder. This could never have happened in your grandfather's time. In a million years, it couldn't have happened. But your grandfather's dead and buried. He's pushing daisies somewhere. But it's happening in your time. Now, what am I going to do, blame you? Yeah, I'll blame you. I'll blame you. You heard the media. Did I play the sound? They didn't know why it happened. They thought it was a spontaneous explosion from a gas pipe. Because God forbid, when I saw Norway bombed, I mean, that's all. We know what it was. They took credit for it. They've already taken credit for it, the name of the group that did it. But the media is still not saying it. Because they would be considered intolerant. And they might be guilty of some kind of offense against multiculturalism. So what's going to happen next? What is going to happen next? When will the world wake up? Will it ever wake up? Is it over? Is it over? Should you pack your suitcase and fly to Mars? Maybe that's the solution. Fly to Mars. What kind of life do you have in this country knowing what's coming? You know, I thought about this today. Every conscious person I know, every productive individual I know, every taxpaying person I know works with two minds. One, they work for now and tomorrow, and the other part of their mind knows that there will be no tomorrow. They know that tomorrow will be stolen from them by the Democrats and by Obama. They know that the handwriting is on the wall. They have seen it. They've smelled it. They live with it. They understand that their freedoms are diminishing on a daily basis. They get that. And who doesn't get it? Who doesn't get it? Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, Barack Hussein Obama, MSNBC. I can name every last one of the enemies of our freedom. Every one of them. So shall I take your calls? What are you going to say about it that I haven't said yet? Let's begin with a New York caller, WOR. Rachel, go ahead, please. What are your emotions today when you hear about Norway's 9/11?
Shock and also not shock, because this is 100% predictable, because Norwegian women have the lowest birth rate on the planet. They've imported non-Westerners to contribute to their society, to their economy, but end up, the tables were turned, and these third world immigrants end up receiving Social Security benefits at a rate 10 times higher than that of native Norwegians.
Well, that's right, because they give 12 months off with full pay for new parents, and it doesn't matter if the parent is actually of Norwegian birth or an immigrant who was made into a fake Norwegian.
And what would shock Americans is that 25% of Oslo's population is non-Western, read that, Pakistani immigrants.
Well, that's right. In other words, if you want a good curry, you're not going to get it from some white guy, are you?
Well,
I mean, white men don't make curry. I mean, you want a curry, you got to bring in the immigrants. You want someone to clean your toilets, you got to bring in an immigrant.
Yeah, but of course,
they don't work. What they do is they come there and have 10 children and live on welfare, the majority of them. We know that.
Exactly.
So they come in there screaming about asylum. Oh, please let me come in because if I'm staying home and blah, 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 wake up. Here you go, a bomb in your soup. Now, were you in Norway recently that you know that the women don't have children there, they just want sex?
No, this is common knowledge that Northern European women, and that includes actually Northern Italian women, they just stopped having babies. And this is causing...
Yes. Oh, no, I know what the birth rate is. It's near zero. It's not replacement level. It's 0.9. Italy has a low rate because, after all, a girl just wants to have fun. But you can't blame them. The men don't want children either.
But can I just make one more comment about Europe in general?
Sure. Well, you mean the Europe that's disappearing before our eyes?
Yes. And this is, a lot of it is self-imposed, because what happened was that during the Holocaust, the Europeans removed 6 million Jews, and now it's been replaced by 20 million Arabs. So in a way, this became a self-fulfilling prophecy. They did this to themselves.
Yes, but you have to ask yourself why let's stick it to Norway for a minute. The most tolerant of all nations is probably Norway, right up there at the top. The most generous welfare system in the world, probably Norway because of the North Slope oil. We know all of this. And they are terrified of being considered racist or phobic of any kind. Consequently, they wake up with 20 of their children slaughtered on an island off of Oslo, and they don't know what to do about it. They don't know who to blame, and there are no guns allowed in Norway. You understand that as well, don't you? No handguns allowed?
Let's not rush to judge and say these are the most tolerant. I mean, that's a little bit of a generalization. I think a lot of these people were Nazi sympathizers a few years ago. So let's not rush.
Ho, 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 you've touched a raw nerve. I have said repeatedly on this program for 15 years that tolerance, ultra-tolerance, is a disguise for the guilt of their ancestors. Yes, absolutely, they're not that tolerant. They're only tolerant of certain types.
Savage.
Someone dressed as a policeman opened fire at a youth Labour Party meeting. This is the Labour Party, which is the governing party of Norway. There were reports that at least 5 people have been injured.
We interrupt this propaganda to give you the truth. Between 20 and 30 children were executed by a radical Islamist group at this camp. They've had their 9/11 in Oslo, and our president has yet to give a speech on it. I suppose that Mayor Bloomberg, if he were to be asked about the bombings in Norway, would say that he likes Norwegian lox. It's the best. If they would ask Biden what he thinks about the Norway bombings and then catch him between the water gun fights, he might say, where's Norway? If they asked Harry Reid what he thinks about the bombings in Norway by the radical Muslims, he might say, I'm not for it, nor am I against it. But if it costs more, I want it. I think, though, that they need to round up the usual suspects in Norway, as they do here at the airports. I think they should absolutely avoid looking at anyone from the Middle East. They should avoid anyone who speaks Arabic. And they should round up the usual suspects, people in wheelchairs, people over 85, people under 9 years old, Methodists and left-handed people, as well as anyone else other than an Arab or a Muslim. Absolutely. There's no question about it. They should do exactly what the Department of Homeland Security recommends here at airports. 1-800-449-8255. This is a terrible day. It's got me very agitated all day. No one wants to listen to me. Nobody wants to hear this. I'm not Norwegian, but why do I care about this so much? Because, I'll tell you why. Because they're a nice people. The Norwegians are nice people. I mean, I hate to use a joke, but have you ever met a Norwegian you didn't like? I haven't. They're nice people. I generally get along with Scandinavians my whole life. I've never had a bad incident with anyone from Norway, Sweden, Finland, never. Okay, Dutch once in a while. But that's already in the low countries. The high countries, though, they are so deracinated in terms of their culture, the Scandinavians. They have so lost their Viking roots that they're like seals. They're like harp seals. They're like harp seals, the people. They're nice people. And, of course, if Obama was a president, he'd be giving a speech about it now and the, saying we're going to crack down on radical Islam worldwide. We stand with Norway. No, he's talking about increasing the national debt. That's what we have right now. And the world isn't going to wake up. I don't know if the world can wake up. I think it's permanently narcotized. The world is certainly narcotized. I don't know whether it can be awakened from its narcolepsy. I do not know if the Western world can ever be revived. I really don't know. Of course we've got troops who are alert. Of course we have the men who could take them out. But we don't have the leaders who can. The leaders are, they're not, you know, I said liberalism is a mental disorder. That's not true in a way. The leaders of liberalism are not mentally disordered. They're cowards. They're corrupt cowards. They are quislings. They are identical to the quisling who I told you about. The word quisling, Vidkun Quisling, the Norwegian who collaborated with the Nazis, who became the president of Norway from 42 to 45 under the Nazi and participated in Germany's final solution. That's where the word quisling comes from. Most of our leaders are like quisling. They are collaborating with the enemies of our survival as a people. They see the world only through the eyes of the enemies of our survival. And that is just what's going on. The American people are just like the Norwegians, just like harp seals waiting for a harpoon to run through them. This is what open immigration and tolerance and liberalism will bring you. The world will never wake up. Never. I don't know what it's going to take. We had 9/11. Did we wake up? We elected a half Muslim. We woke up with a man who seems to have more sympathy for the Muslim than he does for the Christian. I know you can't say that. After all, MSNBC reports every day that he's really a Christian. Anyone who says otherwise is a liar, a thief, a hypocrite, a racist, and any other ist that you can think of. But then again, some of us have not lost our minds yet. Where are the Vikings? Where is the right wing in Norway? What happened to them? There's some big guys in Norway. Where are they? What happened to them? I know where they are. It's the same place where the big guys in England are. They've been put on the shelf. They've been put on. You think that there aren't Brits who could take care of business there with the Muslims who go out screaming with foam coming out of their mouths? Sharia law now. We want Islam in Israel, England, blah, blah, blah. You don't think that there are people in England who could take care of business? But the government turned on them, not on the radical Muslims. The government protects the radical Muslims in England from those within England who could actually do something about it. In other words, let's clear the air. The big soccer thugs in England, the descendants of the rough men who created England, are the ones who can save England. No, the pink ties can't save England. It's the rough men, the descendants of those who built England with all of its warts. They're the only ones who can save England. And again, the same thing holds true in every country in Europe. It's only the roughnecks who have been vilified and put on the shelf by their own government because the government fears them more than they do the bomb that will go. So that's my viewpoint. I've written about this until I can't write it anymore. There's nothing more for me to say. My first book talked about barbs on the berries. I remember way back when I started in the radio in 94, I wrote it in my book, The Savage Nation, and my first book that came out in this series. And I said that a strawberry, even a strawberry, a humble strawberry, if you look at it under a microscope or a magnifying glass, a strawberry has rough hair, like sort of hairs on it, little Barbie hairs around the strawberry. Why? Because nature evolved those hairs to protect the soft, luscious berry from insects. And I said, where are the barbs on our berries? What happened to them? The answer is Obama, Harry Reid, Bloomberg, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton. Go down the list. Have plucked the barbs out of our berries. And what we have now is a soft gelatinous mass that is being eaten alive by every parasite on earth. You want me to say it in another way? I don't have any other way to say it. I draw from nature and I give you a reality. My observations of nature have helped me have an observation about society. I see the world as it is, not the way I'm supposed to see it, according to these psychos who run this country and run the West. Wisconsin, John, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, will this subhuman act awaken the inner Viking within the population there, or are they just going to sit there and take it?
First of all, you got to understand the Norwegians have if I'm not mistaken, one of the highest rates of drug abuse in the world, drug usage, because nothing is illegal in Norway. The last I checked, even heroin was not illegal. Isn't that correct?
That I do not know.
In other words, the entire society has been doped up and they're drugged. First of all, they were as part of the national. They introduced hard drugs, largely sold by immigrant groups, incidentally. They're the drug dealers. The largest number of drug dealers in Norway are from immigrant groups. Everyone knows this to be true. Only no one will say it. They're afraid of saying it for fear that the PC police will come and get them and report them to the higher authorities. When I say higher authorities, I truly mean that. Definitely the higher authorities, because they're high all day long. I don't have an answer. There's no jokes to be made. There's no jokes to be made. It's pathetic. And what is Obama doing about it? Silvana in Washington, D.C., go ahead. You're up in the Savage Nation.
Well, first of all, I wanted to let you know that I just returned from Italy, and I brought home some olive oil from Modena, from the Puglia province, which my mother told me that you liked because she used to listen to you when she lived in Boston.
Oh, yes, that's right. That is the best vinegar. We may as well talk about vinegar now, I mean, because we're talking about such stuff that could rip your guts out. But let's go into this story here on the Norway bombings. It's their 9/11, and we really should focus on it.
It occurred when the Oslo bombing occurred, and I was watching MSNBC, and I was watching the president at the town hall meeting at University of Maryland, and he was talking about his skinny legs. And I thought to myself, you know, what in God's name is going on here? He's not condoning this. This is barbaric act.
I don't even think he knows about it. He has one agenda right now, which is to run up the national debt as high as he possibly can and give as many freebies to as many illegal aliens as he possibly can and as much medical care to as many bums as he can. That's his only agenda. His mind is very focused. I told you, he's a very bright man. He has tunnel vision. His mind is focused only on destroying the American economy as well as he can and as fast as he can. Okay? Sacramento, Nick, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor. Hey, you know, I'm a third generation. I guess you could say I'm a third generation Norwegian, although I'm American at the end of the day, and I don't speak a stitch of the language. My family, my great-great-grandparents, at the turn of the century, were landholders, and this was bequeathed by the Vikings. This goes back to the days of the Vikings,
yeah.
And they're not such nice people. The Norwegian king took their land. And this is a true story, and you know.
Oh, so what are you getting at? They deserve to be bombed today by the Muslims?
No, not at all. But they are not the nicest people on the face of the planet.
Who's that? What peoples are nice on the planet? Name one nation of nice people.
You got it.
Every nation was founded in blood. I said that over and over on my show. There is not a nation on the planet that was not founded in blood. That's a given fact. It's a part of the order of nature, survival of the fittest. So you look in the ancestry of every nation, it was founded in warfare and blood. But now that we've reached the point of such pacifism and weakness and drug addiction, we are unable to defend ourselves, and we are dying because of the vibrancy of the illegal immigrant. And when I say that, I am talking specifically about certain groups of illegal immigrants who are extremely violent and hateful of our ways of life. Now, the important thing to know is that your president has given a speech today, not about Norway's 9/11, but he says gays will serve openly in the military as of September 20th. I told you he has an agenda. Even though there was a bloodbath at a Norwegian children's camp where a gunman execute 9 children or to 20 children or we don't know how many, 30, the Obama administration thought this is the day to announce that gays will serve openly in the military. That's what's important. That's all that matters. That's the most important thing. Not terror rocks Norway, not radical Islam, not why is the DHS focusing on white people? Why are they frisking 85-year-old women in wheelchairs instead of Arab Muslims? Why are they not racially profiling? No, none of those questions need to be asked anymore because they've been answered already by the psychotic government that runs everything over here. New York, Jim, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, thanks for taking the call. It's concerning to me that the world will not wake up and see what's going on. Iran is building nuclear weapons.
Well, let's not bring up Iran. We know what the psychos are doing in Iran, and what is Israel doing about it with all their screaming and crying? For 3 years now, Iran's about to get the bomb. Iran's about to get the bomb. So why doesn't Israel take them out? Is their threat more than ours?
Mike, it's a world threat, though. That's the problem.
Well, I know about a world threat. The Israelis are there. They're worried about the rockets with the nukes. You know, we've given them $3 billion a year for as long as I can remember. They have the most powerful military in the Middle East. Why don't they use it against Iran instead of sitting there fetching to everybody?
Because political correctness has ruined this world. Not only our country, but it's ruined our world.
Well, we know that. But I'm saying this is Israel's problem, Iran. But what do you say about Norway today?
Norway is 9/11. It's the same thing in London. It's the same thing in the embassy bombings in Africa. That's right.
The same thing in Spain. Remember, Spain had a conservative government, and the Muslims bombed the subway bombing in Madrid. And then they threw out the conservatives and put in a socialist government in Spain, a Quisling government, because they wanted to show that they were more Andalusian than they were Spanish. Understand that reference? Today is Norway's 9/11, and Obama says gays will serve openly in the military. And, of course, in New York, you are concerned only about the city is sizzling. Record-breaking 104. Power outages across the city. City has also broken energy consumption records. Air conditioners cranking out full blast with the copper thieves trying to get into the guts of the machines. And what else is going on? Heat tragedy. West Point cadet dies of exhaustion during training. Well, they should make it a gentler training. That shows that the machismo must be put to rest in America. We should no longer have any kind of tough training in the military. First of all, you have women in the training now, and that immediately shows you that you have to have a kinder, gentler training. And then, of course, you have men who never in the past would have been permitted into West Point. And, of course, they can't make the grade, so what you have to do is lower the grades that are necessary to make the grade. You don't keep the standards up. In fact, you should take down the statue of General MacArthur at West Point and put up a statue of General Obama as the new symbol of West Point, rather than the old symbol. I mean, after all, when Obama came into the Oval Office, the first thing to do was get rid of a bust of Winston Churchill, because Winston Churchill represented the evils of the British Empire and colonialism. And I think West Point, in order to show its tolerance and openness and humanity, should take down the beautiful bronze of General MacArthur and probably, I don't know, melt it down and either put up a bust of Janet Reno. Or Big Sis, they could put one up at West Point of Big Sis. Or Hillary Clinton in one of her pantsuits they should put up there at West Point. No, Madeleine Albright, perhaps. Madeleine Albright, the great ex-Secretary of State, now a Quisling working for the businesses of China to see how many different businesses she could peddle into this country and how much she could make sure we don't put any embargoes on Chinese goods. You hear a former Secretary of State. Oh, my God, a country upside down. And you open up the Daily News from New York, and here it is. Gwyneth Paltrow has the tightest tummy in Hollywood. Bombshell model throws fashion industry curves. And they squeeze in terror in Norway, massacre at kids' camp, underneath the breast implants of Kate Upton's breasts. That's the news. That's the news. Ex-RNC chairman Michael Steele to join MSNBC. I swear, I am not making it up. Ex-RNC chairman Michael Steele, he's about as conservative as they don't come, which is exactly why the pill head at MSNBC would hire him. 1-800-449-8255. I can't do it anymore. I mean, I got hours ahead of me today. I've given you so much in this hour already, more than you're going to get from it. I gave you more in the first 40 minutes of this show than you're going to get from the next 4 days on any other show. No one else knew who Quisling was, but now you know who Quisling is, so you don't have to hear it on any of the other shows. So would you rather I talk about a nymphomaniac in Alley Pond Park when I was a teenager? Or how about the yarn man who got cancer? How about the chestnut man who tried to molest us when we were boys? How about the two-fingered geometry teacher who was a former member of the IRA? How about me reading my poem when pasta was spaghetti? I could do that as well. I mean, let me entertain you. Let me entertain you, because there's only so much I can take of all of this. And at the same time, all of this is plaguing me. I have 12 relatives who I love coming out to visit tomorrow. We've invited them all. We're flying them out for the first family reunion of all time. And I'm getting all of the house ready and everything like that and the foods. I'm having laughter at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm waking up laughing at the thought of the dinner that we're going to have together in a restaurant. One has a peanut allergy, the other has a fish allergy, the other one has a dairy allergy, the other one has a meat allergy. I don't know how they're going to put an order in the menu. One is going to say, don't use a pot that had fish in it. The other is going to say, don't use a pot that had a peanut in it. The other one's going to say, don't use a dish that had a clam in it. The other one will say, don't use anything that had milk in it. How can anyone go in a restaurant like this? I was laughing to myself. 5 a.m, I'll be back.
Savage.
So in the middle of worrying about Norway's 9/11 and the killing of 9, 10, 11, 20, 30 Norwegian children by radical Muslims, my mind is also on my regular life. And I have my whole family flying in next week. I brought them in. I'm bringing them in because we're all getting older and I want to get together, you know. But I mean, I'm thinking about the dinner together. And as I say, one, I don't know how it's going to work in a restaurant. I'm trying to figure this out. I'm a pretty bright guy, but I don't know how anyone could prepare a dinner for my family. One is allergic to nuts. The other is allergic to dairy. The other is allergic to fish. The other is allergic to shrimp. The other is allergic to... one is a lacto-ovo-vegetarian. The other is an ovary vegetarian, which is she's a feminist who won't eat any female animals, only male animals. So, I mean, I don't know how this is going to work. I don't know how any chef can handle this. In other words, if one neutralizes the other, the guy says, okay, there's no peanuts in the pot. And the other one says, I want something. I want a peanut sauce. How is this going to happen? I think I'm just going to take them all to a mountaintop and we're going to camp out and we're going to all lick the Mountain Dew in the morning. No, I'm looking forward to it. I really am. It's going to be a lot of fun. Taking them on the boat Sunday. I mean, you have to go on with your life, even if you're Norwegian. You have to go on with your life. You have to go forward. What does life teach us? But that in the midst of tragedy, you have to go on. Life must go on. Isn't that the lesson of the Bible? Isn't that the lesson of every religion on earth, at every prayer service, at every cemetery? Yes, you mourn the dead, and yes, you remember the dead, and yes, life must go on. You can't throw yourself into the grave. On the other hand, how do we prevent ourselves from being bombed by another radical Islamist group when they're breaking the behinds of 85-year-old women in wheelchairs at airports instead of you-know-who?
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is 104 degrees in Philadelphia, 103 in Boston. New York City hit 104 degrees, just too short of its all-time high. And today is Norway's 9/11. Today, Norway's 9/11 occurred, which I'm calling Norway's Quisling Moment on the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the program. If you just joined us, it's a very tragic day for people around the world of a civilized nature, and a very happy day for those who want to overthrow civilization, as you know it, and usher in 1,000 years of darkness. The fact of the matter is, Norway was perhaps one of the most tolerant nations on earth, with a cradle-to-grave welfare system that has become a magnet for immigrants. What you may not understand is that because of the massive oil wealth that Norway enjoys, it has one of the best and most generous welfare systems in the world. Did you know that new parents are entitled to 12 months off from work with 80% pay, or 10 months off from work with full pay? Exactly what Obama would like to give you. Did you know that all Norwegians enjoy full health care and free education throughout their entire lives? So can you see what a paradise this is for someone from Iraq or from Pakistan? They come over there claiming that they need asylum. They have large families. Many of them don't work. That's exactly what's gone on. And what's their reward? The reward today is a bombing in the Capitol where people were killed, 7, 10, we don't know, and a youth camp where a man, no doubt a Methodist in a wheelchair over the age of 85, opened up on the children in Norway. And the Prime Minister of Norway is now saying the camp shooting deaths are likely to rise. They won't even tell people how many were killed because the people would probably fold up and die. And so what is the lesson of all of this? What should we say about this? We can say anything we'd like, but it's never going to be heard in the mainstream, because today Obama's talking about wiping away Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's his big speech. Or about making certain that he can spend more in order to make certain that the economy goes into the tank even faster. Or we could talk about whatever you want to talk about. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's take the callers. Chicago, John, you're on the program. Go ahead, please.
You know, this business out in Norway, a totally peaceful country with unarmed police and shoot children like fish in a barrel, that disgusts me. And what has our darling president said about it?
Well, of course, nothing. He said that today is the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's what he said. That he has nothing to say. But I think that the Norwegians need to crack down on the usual suspects before we rush to judgment about Muslims. Even though a radical Muslim group has taken credit for it, I don't think we should suspect Muslims at all. I think they should arrest all people in wheelchairs, all people over 85 years old, all war veterans and people under 12 years old, and especially any Christian who wears a cross. Those would be the suspects I would look at first. Sacramento, Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation. Okay, next caller on the program. It's a terrible, terrible situation over there. Indiana, Ken, you're up on the program. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Dr. Savage. I like how you mix truth with history and educating your audience. Been listening.
Yes, sir. Yes,
hope
sir.
It's not in vain. I want to just say that there's two houses when it comes to the faith of Islam. There's Dar al-Harb and Dar al-Islam. What that means is there is either the house of war or the house of Islam. Islam is a peaceful religion as long as if you give them peace. What they mean by give them peace is that you submit all to Allah. Therefore, if you don't, you're in the Dar al-Harb, which is the house of war, or you're either in the house of Islam. There is no other. There's no middle ground. There is no gray.
Norway, well, you see, you're an educated man who understands this, but the government's official edict on this is not exactly the same way you're presenting it, as you well understand.
Yes, sir. Yes.
How do you know so much about Islam and the true face of Islam? Where did you learn it?
I'm a Christian, and when 9/11 happened, I got very interested, and I started studying, and I got some different sources, and actually one of my best sources was an ex-Muslim herself, and then my other source was the Internet, until recently you had to get really savvy with the Internet, because a lot of the older versions of the Quran that have some of the hatred type of language in it have been removed from the Internet.
Ah, but it's still taught in the mosques.
But it's still taught in the mosque. And it's
Oh, yeah. In Norway, we have reports that they're teaching that when the children are taught about the Holocaust and the killing of the Jews and the rounding up by the Quislings, the Muslim students often praise or admire Adolf Hitler for killing Jews. And that some of the children laugh or demand teachers in Norway to stop when they're trying to educate about the Holocaust. This is what's going on in Norway right now. That's what they get for being so tolerant.
Unfortunately, my original comment is that I believe that it's going to be just the beginning, and it's going to be a domino effect, and that, you know, 9/11 is actually where it started, but I think it's just going to continue to spread, unfortunately.
Well, I wouldn't say that it was 9/11 where it started. I mean, you can go back to the Crusades. And which crusade do you want to begin with? You know, very often when people say the Crusades, they think they're talking about evil Christian knights who went out and killed innocent Muslims. What they don't realize is that the Crusades were a reaction to the Muslim Crusades. They know nothing about history. Everything is backwards. Everything is upside down. And it was only when the European knights stood up to Islamic murderers who were invading Europe and stopped them at the Battle of Poitiers that the Muslims would turn back. Otherwise, the entire Europe would have been Muslim. But today, the Muslim invaders don't need warfare in order to conquer Europe. They just need tolerance and liberalism.
Well, I'm glad you went back. Let me go back. When let's go back to Muhammad. When he started his religion, he was very kind with Christians and Jews, but he was married to a rich woman, and he was a caravan like type person that traveled around and sold and bought goods. So he interacted with lots of different races and people in the Middle East, including Christians and Jews. And a lot of his talks with them, you know, he said, "Hey, after I discovered religion, they're like us. We're very close." And you see a lot of like that type of language in the Quran and the Hadith, which is another book about his different travelings. But then, when he wanted Islam to be more control, and it was rejected, his talks were rejected by first Christians. Then his language changed to different things, like you'll see in Surah 4:8, where it says, in 4:8 it says, "Have no unbelieving friends and kill unbelievers wherever you find them."
And yet, having said all of that, it is a prophetic religion, and it has a great appeal to over a billion people on the earth, not all of whom are steeped in the violence you are talking about. That's reality, though. I'm not making it just to sound PC. Because if what I was just saying was not true, the whole world right now would be at war, and it's not at war right now. It's a very small number of the fanatics who are inflicting this poison upon the earth.
Well, there's different approaches for different countries. In America, unfortunately, the back in the 50s and 60s, during the if you want to call it the revolution of African Americans, and I'm an African American myself, they were looking for ways to get some type of peace, and they weren't getting it from the government. So the Muslim approach to them was hey, the Christianity is for the white man. You need to become a radical Muslim and different things. So there's different.
That's always impressed me in many ways, that a black person would embrace Islam in America when it was Arab slave traders who sold their ancestors into slavery. I mean, that's the part that I just cannot understand, how that gets lost in translation during the proselytizing, especially in the prisons.
If you don't know your history, and if you're ignorant to history, you can be told.
Right, when I hear of black men taking on Arabic names as though they've in somehow found the Holy Grail, without even understanding that it was Arab slave traders who rounded up the black African and put him into slave chains, I don't understand how they don't understand this.
One word, ignorance, Dr. Savage.
Well, you thank God there are men like you out there. And now I want to tell you something very important from one of my most important sponsors, and that's really important to listen to me, because if you age, you know that as you age, you focus more on the legacy that you leave your children and grandchildren. And sharing your wisdom and experience with your kids and grandkids is one of life's most important callings. But what happens if you suffer from hearing loss? Well, this hearing loss will lead to a gift called hearing that could be lost. And leaving that legacy requires effective two-way communication. Now there's a new medical breakthrough for those with hearing loss called the Esteem Hearing Implant. This is a revolutionary solution. It is 100% invisible, so you can keep up your active lifestyle. The Esteem Hearing Implant delivers a natural improvement to your hearing with a natural clarity of sound. I want you to learn about this new breakthrough and give your children a legacy that they're going to cherish for a lifetime. So for your own sake, call 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. It's that simple. envoymedical.com. That's 800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Do it today. Do it for yourself. Do it for your children. Call 1-800-953-5453. Or envoymedical.com. For a list of side effects and benefits associated with Esteem, visit envoymedical.com.
Savage.
Now we're going to talk about Islam and the spread of Islam going back in history. and how it became such a powerful force in human affairs. Probably one of the most amazing stories of conquest in the whole history of the human race would be that of the great days of the Arab conquests, and I need to talk about them because we're living through them all over again. What you have to understand is that it was not Muhammad who was really the conqueror. It was his follower, Abu Bakr. And it was Abu Bakr who set about to subjugate the entire world to Allah. And he used little armies of 3,000 to 4,000 Arabs, according to those letters that the Prophet had written from Medina in 628 to all the monarchs of the world. It was only small armies that were necessary, targeted small armies. Now, you could argue that these little bombings here and there are the result of small armies of Muslim immigrants. You could. If you think this is a small story in Norway, you're not looking at the pictures. You have to see the pictures. An entire 17-story government building is smoking to this moment. All the windows were blown out. So it looks as though a truck bomb was driven into the basement garage or something to that effect. The entire building is rubble from the inside out. And another member of this radical Muslim group went to a child's camp with teenagers and executed up to 30 of them. We don't really know right now. So what is this all about? Why are the Muslims on the warpath? You could say Islamists if you wish. But you know that everywhere you turn, there's trouble on the earth. And it seems to be a Muslim nation that can't get along with its neighbor. Wherever the problem is. It's always the same thing. Wherever it is. But you have to understand the story of conquest did not begin yesterday. It didn't begin with 9/11. The most amazing story of conquest in the whole history of our race is that of the great days of the Arabs, when the Byzantine army was smashed at the Battle of Yarmouk in 634. And the Emperor Heraclius, his energy sapped by a disease and his resources exhausted by the Persian War, saw his new conquests in Syria, Damascus, Palmyra, Antioch, Jerusalem, and the rest all fall almost without resistance to the Muslim. Large elements in those countries went over to Islam, and then the Muslim armies turned east. The Persians had found an able general in Rustam, and they had a great host with a great force of elephants, the Persians did. And for 3 days, the Persians fought the Arabs at Qadisiyah, and then they lost. And in 637, the Persians lost and ran. And the conquest of all of Persia followed. And that is why Iran is today Muslim. And the Muslim Empire then pushed far into western Turkestan and went eastward until it met the Chinese. Egypt fell almost without resistance to the new Muslim conquerors, who, filled with fanatical belief in the sufficiency of the single book, the Quran, burned the vestiges of the book copying industry of the Alexandria Library, at the time the greatest library on earth. They burnt it to the ground. The tide of conquest then poured along the north coast of Africa to the Straits of Gibraltar and to Spain. Spain was invaded by the Muslims in 710, and the Pyrenees Mountains were reached in 720. In 732, the Arab advance had reached the center of France, but here it was stopped for good at the Battle of Poitiers and thrust back as far as the Pyrenees again. The conquest of Egypt had given the Muslim a naval fleet, and for a time it looked as though they would take Constantinople. They made repeated attacks by sea between 672 and 718, but the great city held out against them. I could go on, but I think you should look it up yourself, and you will see how the Muslim Empire spread until 750 AD. It spread from Spain to Turkestan, and it was not spread through love, nor was it spread by peace, nor was it spread by the message of love thy neighbor as thyself. It was spread by burning and by the sword. It was spread by fire and by blood. And that's what went on then. And what's going on now is a repeat of history. The question is, why is it going on now? The answer is because we are weak. Because the West has been hollowed out. Because of the idiocy of liberalism and tolerance and multiculturalism. The West is in decline. And the West is disappearing. Because the birth rate is near zero in the West amongst the Caucasian race. It is declining. It is declining, and of course, people move into as they say, nature abhors a vacuum. Well, there are people on earth who also abhor a vacuum, and they move in on it. And what does that have to do with America? Everything and nothing. Everything, when you look at DHS, Department of Homeland Security, they're focusing on your grandmother at the airports. They're focusing on little children under the age of six with crippled legs. They're focusing on Methodists. They're focusing on Christians. They're focusing on people with crosses. They're focusing on anybody and everybody except those who you know are likely to be the bomber. How did that happen? Well, you can figure out how it happened. Liberalism is a twisted religion. Liberalism is a twisted mental disorder. Liberalism is self-suicide. Any way you want to put it, it comes out the same way. But I've just given you a history. A little history lesson you're not going to get in the local newspaper. What you're living through history, nevertheless, whether you know it or not, you're living through history all over again. You're living through an attempt to take over your nation and destroy it from within. You're looking at an attempt to usher in 1,000 years of darkness. And if you think it can't happen here, my friends, you are mistaken. And my friends, I'll tell you something again. We're in the midst of a war for our very survival. And guess who's winning? We are not winning. No, we're not winning. In fact, the forces of darkness are winning. They're doing quite well indeed. I know you might say, but Obama just killed Osama bin Laden. Let's not get hysterical. Then how do you explain the bombing in Norway if Osama bin Laden was the whole story? See? Look at the picture, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Savage.
Well, I've given you a history lesson in order to put in context the bombings in Norway, which did not come out of a vacuum. And I think we can move on, frankly. I'd like to move on. I don't want to talk about it anymore. There's nothing new that I can say, or I don't think you're going to say anything new. There's a couple of disinformational stories coming out saying it was a right-winger who did it. But that's from one news reporter, and I don't know if I would trust that report, because an Islamist group has taken credit for the bombings in Norway. And, of course, as you well know, the government media complex in Norway is no different than the government media complex in America, where they're quick to blame their own people rather than, let us say, others. Let's put it to you that way. Okay? So, having said that, what shall I do? We can talk about any other topic or take a quick call or two and then go on to the stories I wanted to talk about from my summertime story sequence that I've done in the past. Let's begin in Virginia with Stephanie. Welcome to the program, Stephanie. What's on your mind?
Hi. It's nice to talk to you, Dr. Savage.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, I know you just said you wanted to end with the topic, but I'm a med student, and so we've been following this pretty closely while I've been at the hospital today. And everyone just kind of feels that Obama's reaction to what happened in Norway has been completely inadequate, especially with the shootings of the children. I mean, I remember when I live in Virginia, so I remember when the Virginia Tech shootings happened, and I remember
right.
when there was the shootings of
yes.
the Amish children back in Pennsylvania. And our nation, you know, completely came together and was ready to support, you know, in Virginia, we felt tremendous support for Tech. And I feel that our nation would be willing to support and help and at least give our condolences to Norway. And I feel like he hasn't done that at all and isn't letting, you know, America.
Oh, no. Today was his big day for one of his chief lobbying groups. He said he's ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's what's more important than a solidarity with Norway in the search for the perpetrators.
I know. And see, that's what makes a great president versus a good president. And I really don't think he's either one. A great president would know that it's time to stand up for what's going on now and that his agenda would, you know, be pushed to the back burner. But, I mean, that's why...
Well, I'm honored that you're a medical student or a... what did you say?
I'm a medical student. I'll be... I graduate next year and I'll be a doctor.
And how would you have the time to listen to talk radio? I'm very curious.
My fiance, he's a physician's assistant. He listens to it every day on the way home from work, and he clued me into it. And so now we listen to it, and everything you say, I just always feel like you always hit the nail, you know, nail on the head. Like I really feel you're very educated, and it's nice to listen to someone who is, you know, people in the medical field a lot of the times are very, very liberal, and I'm on the conservative side, so it's nice to listen to someone who has the same.
Well, thank God there's hope for the medical profession. Yet, Stephanie from Virginia, thanks for calling the Savage Nation. Kansas, Bill, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Michael, we've talked before. I'm a special ops guy. This is part of Zawahiri's strategy, announced that he would go after Europe since he can't get to the United States. But you.
Well, I'm sorry. Wait, this is part of whose strategy?
Ayman al-Zawahiri is an Egyptian who founded...
Okay, no, I didn't hear that. Yes, of course. He's the number one terrorist on the globe.
A little red dot on his forehead from preying on a coal. I mean, this guy is serious. He's a serious killer. He's involved in the killing of Sadat, even, back in the old days. So this guy's been around. When he combined his forces with Osama bin Laden, who had stolen them from a Palestinian by the name of Azam, they formed Al-Qaeda. So Al-Qaeda has both Egyptian and Palestinian roots by way of bin Laden. But by going up to Norway, they disconnected themselves from their actual diaspora. And the Norwegians are extremely tough. We laugh at them, but remember, if you remember the word Vikings, and if you think of the Norman conquest, it was Norwegians that did that.
Yeah, but I certainly know that, but, you know, to say that there's Viking blood is true, but what does that have to do with the Norwegian of today?
Well, they resisted the Nazis and were vicious. True, there was a Vidkun Quisling, but what I'm saying
is... Well, come on, I talked about Vidkun Quisling at the beginning of the program. He ran the Quisling government. It doesn't mean all Norwegians were Nazi sympathizers, but where are the tough Norwegians today? Why don't we hear their reaction?
They haven't had a chance to act yet, and in fact, we're still suppressing what actually happened. If it was Muslim terror, they will deal with it. In this case, the Muslims are disconnected from their own lines of communication.
Well, wait a minute. The Muslims have taken credit for it. A radical Muslim group has taken credit for the terror attack in Norway today. They've already said they did it, and yet the newspapers are saying it was a right-winger who did it. Can you believe that?
I believe it, because in the aftermath of anything like this, many groups can take credit, but we have to find out what in fact it is. Norway has excellent police, and they are vicious. I have actually seen them fight in these modern wars. They are not sitting on the sidelines. We don't talk much about some of these countries. But Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Finland have provided support from Bosnia on, and they have fought.
Of course, Norway has 500 troops, if I'm not mistaken, in the theater of Afghanistan, if I'm not mistaken. And these are the remnants of the Vikings that you spoke about earlier. But they don't represent the average Norwegian man today any more than Norwegian woman who will not have a baby represents Norwegian womanhood of the past.
What I think happens here, though, in this clash of civilizations is these people don't understand. They will galvanize the Norwegians and others, and I think they will spring back. I think we would have, too, had we been hit again, and it will take another hit for Norway to really react. And then when they do, they may show us the way to get rid of these people, because we have to. There is no other thing
Well, these radicals want to usher in 1,000 years of darkness, women in burqas. The death of freedom of every kind imaginable. All you got to do is look at take a peek into Iran to see what these fanatics have done to the Iranian people, who once enjoyed the most advanced civilization on the earth. They've been thrown backwards hundreds of years by this psychotic Ahmadinejad and those stupid mullahs.
You're right. But you remember, in the conquests that they engaged in, they always overmatched their enemies. They actually were better fighters. In everything we've fought them in so far, they've hidden behind rocks, they've stayed in their homes, they've deployed bombs. They expect that they'll scare us into some way of surrender, but they don't necessarily have a way to turn that into conquest, as in the old days when they fought people toe-to-toe. So this is very different, and it isn't really like Islamic men. In fact, we could capitalize on that, because an Islamic man in the old days would fight you. Today, they run and hide and leave a bomb in place. They're actually cowards. And so, as a result...
Well, but why do they have to fight with small armies of 3,000 as was done 1,000 years ago, when they can do it from within with tolerance, with multiculturalism, and with brainwashing? They don't have to actually bomb anybody to convert you to their way of life or to their 1,000 years of darkness.
If they were going to take over, they would have to have some way, in addition to terrorizing people, to actually assume control of the government. You can't do that.
No, wait a minute. Slow down. You just hit the nail on the head. They do have a way. They've got whole Western governments professing their viewpoint and making the white male in America, for example, the target of... In other words, DHS just put out a video. Do you know that the image of the terrorist is not that of a Middle Easterner? It's that of a white male in America?
Sure. And that's a straw man. It will disappear with this regime, just like the emphasis on...
But you see, this regime is so given over to Islam in a soft way that they actually have taken the side of the enemy without even knowing it. I don't even think they even understand what they've done.
I believe that they have understood, because there is a natural kinship between Islamists, the left, and communists. And when it comes to collapsing Western society, I mean, they work together easily.
Yes.
And I've heard you say this.
So you're actually saying that Obama is an enemy within then. You're confirming that suspicion that he's a fellow traveler of the radical left and the Islamists?
Well, here's the thing. A president should be the leader of his country. He should stand for his country's interests. He should stand for his country's traditions. Does Obama do any of that?
No.
if we step
No, of course
away
not. He undermines every tradition we have and every strength we have. He turns into a weakness. I mean, how many different ways do I have to say that I've gone on and on about? Even the death of the space shuttle to me was impeachable as far as I'm concerned.
Well, at the same time, he's done a number of things like failing to defend statutes that are there, like defense of marriage and so forth. I mean, he's abrogated his responsibilities. So, yes, in fact, he has defined himself as an enemy. However, the press and others give him a buy, and they then rewrite the standards. So we, the Norwegians, the Germans, the English and so forth, will have to figure out how to solve this problem.
Here's the new headline. Norway attacks are the result of a madman, they're saying.
Well, and if it proves to be that that's the case, then, you know, it isn't an Islamic attack. And what I'm saying
But an Islamic group took credit for it.
I understand that. But there are people who masquerade as Islamic groups. And one of Zawahiri's and another terrorist.
They say the 32-year-old Norwegian man suspected of the Oslo bombing and shooting at a youth camp. One man did both? They say he is not Islamic. They say he acted alone. Do you actually believe this? I don't believe a word of it. To me, this is pure, absolute disinformation in order to make certain that the Norwegians do not act out of turn. Okay? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Pittsburgh, PA. Hanny, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mr. Savage. You know, I'm a conservative Muslim. You know, I pray five times a day. I fast. My wife wears the hijab. And, you know, me and you would disagree on a lot of things. But one thing I do want to thank you for is that a little bit earlier in your show, you stated that it's a minority of the 1.2 billion Muslims. Now, I was born in this country. My children are Syrian immigrants. And I just want to make two quick points. The first one is, you know, with the Arab Spring that's going on, with them trying to overthrow these tyrannical governments like the one in Syria or Iran, which have really thrown back the Middle East into the Dark Ages.
Whoa, wait. I think you're making statements that are unsupportable by the facts. You're not going to argue that the Muslim Brotherhood is a democratic organization within Egypt, are you?
No, sir, I'm not. But what I'm saying, they're going to be a political party that is going to have to be dealt with, just like any other political party.
Oh, dealt with? Since the 1920s, the Muslim Brotherhood has been trying to take over Egypt and remove the secular nature of the Egyptian society and turn it into a radical Islamic society. So if you think that that's an advancement for Egypt, I would disagree with you.
No, sir, I do not think that's an advancement. What I'm saying, though, is that the Muslim Brotherhood, they will play a part in the future of Egypt. That is something that's just going to be a truth that everybody is going
right
to.
And the Muslim Brotherhood killed Sadat, so this is now a party that should be at the table. They should be rewarded for killing Sadat.
I mean, what they claim, I don't know the politics of Egypt.
So in other words, you're celebrating the Arab Spring that doesn't exist. The Arab Spring is actually a descent into the most horrendous reversion to terror, rather than, you know, Mubarak was a terrible dictator, but he was a friend of America for 40 years. And Obama and Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice did the exact wrong thing by attacking Mubarak and bringing in the more radical elements of Islam in Egypt. How in the world can you say that that's an advancement?
Mr. Savage, let me ask you this. I mean, you fancy yourself as a Democrat, which I believe you are, or not a Democrat.
Wait, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. I said what?
I'm sorry. I say you believe in the ideal of a democratic country, and so my comment to you is.
Well,
that
I know you're going to use rhetoric right now, which is very, very clever of you. But we understand what democracy can lead to in a country that's filled with despots.
This is true. I mean, like I said, me and you are going to disagree, and I would love one day to. I mean,
so in other words, you as a Muslim who prays five times a day would like to see all Muslims praying five times a day.
No, I think it's a personal choice.
So then you're not part of that 1%.
No, I am not, and I tell you this. I think you said it perfectly. They are a poison, and they are a greater poison to people like me. I mean, they are a great threat to this country.
That's right. You are more threatened by the 1% of poison than we are, the outside non-Muslim world. And it's very interesting, but my new novel, Abuse of Power, which will be out in September, which I read from this week, actually has a dialogue between my protagonist, Jack Hatfield, and a Muslim he meets in a cell phone store who was just like you, bearded, married, three children, very religious but not fanatical. And they have this dialogue that really is worthy of being read by 900 million Muslims. I doubt very much that they'll buy the book the way the Mormons bought Glenn Beck's novel. I'll be right back. The story I'm going to tell you occurred when I was a young man, first a kid and then a young man. And it was about a man who grew up as my father's, one of my father's best friends in a very poor neighborhood in New York City. They were immigrants together. Their parents came over. They came over, I think, maybe on the same boat, or they met each other in the slums of New York. And they both had a very tough life, and they worked their way up little by little, as the immigrants have to do and as they struggle in the society. And this man went into a business that took off at a certain point like a rocket. He hit a fad in a certain business, and he started to make a great deal of money, and he moved way beyond our family. While we lived in an attached house in Queens, New York, an attached brick house, he had the money to move his family to a detached house. Remember how important that distinction was in those days. It's like the Buick LeSabre as opposed to the Buick Roadmaster. Well, God forbid you a Rockefeller, you bought a Cadillac, if you can imagine. That's how people used to grade themselves in those days by their success, you know, their status, cars and houses. I don't suppose it's much different today. It just isn't as easy to figure out in some regard, not on the road anyway. Anyway, so he moved to this detached house in Roslyn, New York. And it was a beautiful house. It had its own garden all around it. We only had a little strip of grass in the backyard, and a little teeny one in the front. And the carpet was wall to wall, and it was pink, and he was a big cigar smoker, and we go over and visit, and I had a very good time. He would gloat, you know, with the cigar and lord it over my father, and we'd leave. My father never said anything against him, but, you know, I could see in his eyes that he was in his, you know, he was a little, let's say lost that little battle at that time. You know how men are. I mean, men are competitive. Even if they love their friend, if their friend does better than them, there's a degree of envy in every human being. It's just one of the cardinal sins. As years went on, the man's business continued to thrive. And then I left home. I moved away from New York City. I went and did my thing collecting plants, working for my graduate degrees, thousands of miles away. I was living 6,000 miles away, then 9,000 miles away in the Fiji Islands. And lo and behold, on one of my trips back to New York when I was already a father myself, I had heard that this man's business had collapsed entirely. The fad that he had rode like a wave had died. Women were no longer buying that particular product. And the man who had a chain of successful wholesale stores lost everything. He lost everything, and it was so fast that he wound up living where he started, on the Lower East Side of New York, in a poor relative's apartment with his wife and the relative's family, back where he started in a one-room apartment. And that's where I come in. I come back from one of my trips to the Fiji Islands. I'm a young man in my, I don't know how old I must have been. I don't remember, 25, 30. I don't remember what age I was already anymore. And there he was sitting in my father's house. And I loved this man. I loved him like another father. I loved all my father's friends. And you know how it is when you're a kid in a very close-knit community. You tend to love the people like they're your own. You know, we all grew up so closely together. There was never a bad word between him and my father. Man, he's sitting there shrunken up in the chair in my living room where he had lost everything. And he looks up at me, still smoking a cigar, and he was shrunken in the chair. And he looks up at me in his eyes and he says, Michael, look what happened to me. Look what happened to me. And his eyes were like wandering left and right. He didn't understand what happened to him. And he said, I'd rather I have cancer than what God did to me. Lo and behold, I soon left New York. I went back to do what I did, which is collecting plants. And I heard that 2 years later, he died from one of the most rapidly invasive forms of brain cancer. Be careful what you say. God hears the truth, but waits. And on top of it all, a one-armed Frank level howl. Did I ever tell you about one-armed Frank? You haven't heard the one-armed Frank story. Do I have a moment? My father, I told you, was an antique dealer. May he rest in peace. So we would come home from... Well, he had a guy who came in with one arm. I don't know how the guy became one arm. But he, you know, you didn't know a lot of people with one arms in those days.
Even today, they have I guess you don't know on one-arm people today, they have a fake arm. But he had the arm sewed up, you know, in a suit. So, all right, you accept him. His name, though, was One-Arm Frank. Because nobody hid reality in those days. Today, it's like, oh, yeah, he's normal. He's just like a... In those days, it was One-Arm Frank. Today, it's like, oh, he's better than normal, man. He's special. Like, if you have one arm, you're better than a guy with two arms today. You know what I mean? If you have no arms and no legs, you're Superman in the politically correct world of today. But in those days, if you were missing an arm, that's what you would name, One-Arm Frank. Whatever your anomaly was, that was your name. It made it easier for the average person to remember everybody. So One-Arm Frank was a very sweet guy, but a breath on him. Now, I want to tell you, there are bad breaths, then there are very bad breaths, then there are medicinal problems.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
News today is that the Muslims have attacked Norway, the least likely terror target, although given their tolerance and liberalism, would we say they're the most likely target? Well, look at it either way you want, okay? The fact of the matter is they don't bother anybody, the Norwegians, and they're so tolerant that they've bent over backwards for their Muslim guests, and this is their reward. More than 30 at least killed in downtown Oslo, and one of the Muslims went to a youth camp and started opening up with an automatic weapon. The children were jumping into a cold, icy bay to get away from the bum. And eyewitnesses are reporting seeing between 25 and 30 bodies. It's really sickening. And what really bothers me is that the Norwegians, of all people, would be the last people on earth you would think that the Muslims would attack. So who did it? Well, the American media says they don't know. In fact, we have a montage of news anchors, reporters, etc., the vermin in the media, refusing to identify the causation of the bombs in Norway. Some were saying it could be spontaneous combustion. Some earlier said it could be a gas pipe explosion. Some asked why this happened and who claimed responsibility. They didn't know why. They thought it was perhaps an accident. Perhaps God did it himself. God, you forbid you should jump to conclusions and assume that it's terror bombing by Muslims. Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. We're reporting now that Intelligence Police Chief Jan Christensen said last February that Islamic extremism was a major threat to the country and his main concern. Surprised he wasn't fired. Last year, police arrested three Muslim men based in Norway who were suspected of planning an attack using explosives. And this month, Norwegian prosecutors filed a terrorism charge against Mullah Krekar, founder of the Kurdish Islamist group Ansar al-Islam, who was accused of threatening a politician with death over his potential deportation from the country. The Muslim Krekar had warned that, quote, Norway will pay a heavy price if he were deported. Well, I guess they paid a heavy price. And now Norway has a choice. Either they could beg him for forgiveness and let him bring in his cohorts and they could take over Norway and turn it into a slave colony of Islam, or they could throw them out. Real simple choice. You know, neither of the above will occur. Sad day. Heartbreaking day. Norway's 9/11. You probably didn't even hear about it. I'm sure you didn't hear about it. After all, it's hot in your city. I mean, the thing is that it's hot in the summer. I mean, it's very hot, and the important thing is to talk about the heat in the summer. Today, Obama certified the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, ending the ban on gays serving openly in the military. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't diversity wonderful? You know, that's what we need is diversity, not protection from terror. And, of course, the Department of Justice preparing subpoenas against News Corporation. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting how you're seeing the Department of Justice used as a personal goon squad for the President of the United States? Not one word in the media. And believe me, Murdoch is no friend of mine. I don't know the man. News Corp has banned me from their network. But this is wrong. This is just dead wrong. 1-800-449-8255. But then, of course, we could also talk about the Hollywood people. Who's dating who and whose skirt was flying in the air. Here we go. Sex addicts in Hollywood. That's a major story on Fox News. Is Hendricks the next Wonder Woman? Is Amanda pro-gun? And is JT pro-geek? That's what's important. Sexiest sci-fi stunners. You know, I mean, this is what's important, not Muslim terrorism. That's what's important. Yesterday, I told you about Captain Chris Ferguson. He was the commander of Space Shuttle Atlantis, the final flight of the Space Shuttle program, a sad day in America. I told you all about his incredible, incredible road and hard work. Bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from Drexel University in 84. Master of Science in Aeronautical Engineering from the Naval Postgrad School in 91. Navy ROTC program brought him into the University of Pennsylvania, received his Naval Aviator Wings, went into the F-14, then eventually joined the Top Guns, taught in the Top Gun School. A real hero, if ever there was one. Not put there by affirmative action. So where have all the real heroes gone? Well, they're actually still here. They're flying the space shuttle. They're flying our jets in our military. They're performing surgery in unknown places around America. They're discovering medicines, but you don't see them. You won't see them because the vermin in the media don't want you to see them. Who do you see? Reality shows like the new Ringling Brothers. Why are there so many reality shows? Tattoos and I've never seen anything like this. The lowest people in America, low lives in high places. Why are we seeing this? It's a way of throwing mud in the eye of the American people, letting them think that nobodies are somebodies and that somebodies are nobodies. Just as in communist China of the past, when they removed surgeons from the surgery ward and put them in the laundry in order to make things fair. And then they took peasant laundresses from the laundry and they said, comrade, you will be a surgeon. There's no difference. It's all a manifestation of worldwide socialism. The last astronaut on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
New York WOR, Richard, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael. Here's a strange kind of idea to throw out. If you look at the history of the United States, we used to be on the gold standard. FDR took us off the gold standard in 1933, and the gold window closed in 1971 by Nixon.
Nixon, right.
That's right. I think the average person knows that the value of their money is depreciating over time.
Yes.
So everybody walks around with money in their pockets that they call money. It's not gold. It's paper dollars.
Right, right.
They know depreciates.
Right.
What impact does that have on morality of society and corruption and decline? If you feel that the money that you hold, that you place value on, is continually being inflated away. And
so it's an interesting metaphor you're creating. The creation of a currency that has no value whatsoever, just an assumed value, and the debasement of the standards or the ethics or the morality of a nation.
You can debase your currency, which is what we all depend on. We all depend to live on this thing we carry around in our pockets.
Right.
And if that can be debased, then why can't everything else also be debased? What holds value if the thing you depend on, which is money, and that's more important to all of us to live than just about...
Well, we're all worried about Bernanke and Geithner, these two losers who are absolutely incompetent at what they're doing, selected by the Marxist president. Their whole solution is to throw money at the problem, and unemployment went up, not down. You know that Obama spent almost, what, $1 billion or more on the so-called stimulus with Nancy Pelosi dispersing it to her friends. Nobody got that money. Where'd the money go? It went in a few hands. And what happened? Were jobs created? No, the opposite is true. Jobs were lost as a result of the stimulus. The only thing that can stimulate the economy are less regulation, lower taxes, get rid of the red tape, and you'll see the economy boom.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Now, as far as the currency goes, would you argue that we should go back to a gold standard?
You need to have something which ties the value so that you can't get away with murder. And basically, you can't have this thing depreciating at this rapid rate over time. And this has been going on for decades. This is not a current phenomenon.
Absolutely, but that's how the economy has been kept aloft, which is through this sub rosa inflation that we know exists. There's a strange paradox going on right now with an inflation and a deflation at the same time. And maybe I'm not using the right term when I say deflation, but housing prices have dropped an astonishing, I think it's 22%. And the entire housing market collapsed by 21% through at the time of the Great Depression. So we've actually had a greater loss in housing values in the last few years than we had during the Great Depression back in the late 20s and early 30s. That's number one. We're not blaming Obama for that. We're blaming the bankers and Bush for that, as well as the others who created the housing bubble in the investment community, which we know was built on a house of cards. But then at the same time, our dollars in the bank are losing value because there's no interest being paid. And the reason there's no interest being paid is because Bernanke keeps printing money and artificially keeps inflation rate at near zero. But we all know that there's an inflation going on. All you got to do is look at the price of coffee and commodities. In other words, the real value of things can be seen in the cost of commodities, such as oil, sugar, coffee, wheat, soybeans, you name it. Am I right about that?
It's true.
So this is why the Arabs, stupid they're not, they have the principal commodity that the world needs, which is oil, correct? The entire world runs on that commodity. There's not a nation on earth that doesn't run on a petroleum distillate, correct or incorrect? I'm right about that. So he who controls the petroleum distillates controls the world. That's our friends in the Middle East, the wonderful people who have given us Sharia law, put women in burqas, cut hands off. The wonderful advanced people of the Middle East control the world's economy one way or the other. So when they see that they were getting $40 a barrel for oil 10 years ago, whatever the number of years was, and all of a sudden that $40 no longer buys them the same amount of prostitution in New York City and London and elsewhere, they raise the cost of oil in order to buy the same hooker that they used to be able to buy 20 years ago for $40. They now have to pay $140 for. I'm giving you an example.
But here's the thing. Here's a question you have to ask. We in this country are capable of producing massive amounts of natural gas, and we could be moving over large mobile fleets of delivery trucks, and all sorts of other things to using natural gas, which costs dramatically less. Nobody is asking the question why the U.S. government, why the Congress, why the president is not pushing.
Why? Because it's called monopoly. These are stooges of the oil industry. The seven sister oil companies run the world with their Arabic buddies. Now, the fact of the matter is we have oil, not only natural gas, but we have enough oil in the slope drilling in Alaska to satisfy our needs for 100 years by what I've read.
Michael, ExxonMobil bought a company called XTO, as well as Chevron. A lot of these companies are buying up natural gas companies now. Natural gas is incredibly cheap. Think about the number of jobs.
Monopoly, 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 monopoly. Where is the antitrust division of the U.S. Justice Department right now? The answer is nowhere. Nowhere to be found.
They're blocking the use of natural gas, which we should be using in this country.
You know, I want to remind people of the last great populist movement in America that I can recall instantly, and that would be the one of Teddy Roosevelt. This is a long time ago. Teddy Roosevelt ran on a popular slogan of bust the trusts. You're probably aware of that, correct?
Yes.
Okay, very few people know that. But Teddy Roosevelt, in addition to being known as a rough rider and the guns and the this and the that, Teddy Roosevelt ran a very clever populist campaign called Bust the Trusts. And he was talking about monopolies such as Standard Oil, which was run by John D. Rockefeller, who owned the entire oil industry. So Teddy Roosevelt won the presidency, and he had his Justice Department go after Standard Oil to break up the company because he said we cannot have one company running the entire oil industry. Cleverly, though, the businessmen outfoxed Teddy Roosevelt's idiots in the Justice Department, because instead of there being a single Standard Oil of New Jersey, of Standard Oil, there suddenly became hundreds of them: Standard Oil of California, Standard Oil of New Jersey, Standard Oil of Pennsylvania, Standard Oil of Rhode Island, Standard Oil of this, Standard Oil of that. So they broke it up and they owned them anyway. That's what he did. That's what Rockefeller did.
But Michael, today, the bulk of global production is from national oil companies in places like Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Mexico, Russia. These are all national oil companies. The bulk is not produced by U.S. producers. What I'm saying is something different. Do you have any idea?
You're saying shift to natural gas is what you're saying.
I'm saying that the number of jobs we could create in this country, the benefit to the American public, you could create hundreds of thousands. Maybe.
I agree. I wouldn't even care if you're in the natural gas business and you're just doing this to promote your product. I agree with you 100%. But there's also oil in the permafrost of Alaska, underneath the permafrost. But the psychotics called environmentalists, and I am an ardent conservationist, not an environmentalist, by the way. The psychotics who have no knowledge of science at all say, oh, you can't drill in the tundra. You can't drill up there because you'll destroy the environment. Now, I heard these same arguments back in the 70s when the Alaska pipeline was being argued about. They were going to build an Alaska pipeline going from Prudhoe Bay or to Prudhoe Bay over the ground. Well, the schmucks, the illiterate morons, the science illiterates were saying, oh, you're going to destroy the tundra. You're going to destroy the caribou by putting a hot pipe over the ground. Well, you know what happened, don't you? What happened is the caribou now hover beneath the oil pipeline. They like the warmth that runs through that area. It's like steam heat, baby. I mean, for a million years, they were living in the cold, and they adapted with big fur coats and, you know, shaggy coats and fur coats and overcoats, your coat, my coat, his coat, because it was cold up there. Now the man comes along and he builds a pipeline over the ground, elevated to make sure that they didn't interfere with the migration of the caribou. And so the caribou now hang out underneath the pipe, because the oil's warmer than the permafrost. And they like it. They enjoy it. It's warmer than before. Now, I'm not saying the caribou are suddenly going to lose their coats and put on bikinis, but I am saying to you that the environmental illiterates of yesterday have produced another generation today with a myth called global warming. As a matter of fact, I know a gentleman who had a discussion with one of these environmental illiterates not too long ago about drilling in the Alaska Slope. And he said to them, would you be in favor of drilling in the Alaska Slope? And the person, of course not. And he said, well, why not? He said, because it would destroy the environment. Then he said, you'd be opposed to, the man then said to the environmental illiterate, he said, you would be opposed to clear cutting up there, wouldn't you? And the environmental illiterate said, oh, absolutely, I'm opposed to clear cutting up there in that part of Alaska. And the man said to him, sir, there are no trees up there in the tundra. It's permafrost. Get it?
Savage.
You know, right now, more than ever before, accurate information is vital for any Americans who want to see the world as it really is. But the left-wing cable networks mindlessly spoon-feed select information from twisted sources in their presentation of so-called truth. Waleed Shobhat is an ex-terrorist, formerly a radical Muslim on the path of jihad until he converted to Christianity in 1994. He joins us now to shed light on a recent smear campaign against him by CNN. Mr. Shobhat, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for having me.
What is it exactly that CNN tried to do to you? Give us some background.
CNN is attempting to destroy my credibility, as many others. Chris Hedges, in the past, had been the first to attack my story, saying that it was a fraud without providing any evidence. CNN is after me because very likely they're working for the interest of care. And they're also against what we're reporting. I was the first in the country to report the Huma Abedin story. I was the first in the country to report what really Faisal Abdel Raouf had stated in the Arabic language. He wanted to build a mosque by ground zero. It was the information I provided, translation from the Arabic, that basically got Americans upset about the ground zero mosque. I was the first in the country to report several characters. The chaplaincy of the United States, held by Al-Alawani, he wrote written anti-Semitic reports in the Arabic language. No one has published any of this information. The connection between Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's secretary, to her mother, who's been found to be a member of a 63 clandestine secret Muslim Brotherhood group called the Sisterhood. It was I who broke those stories. So when you in the front line fighting for the facts, of course you're going to be attacked. And CNN, of course, is doing the bidding for the Islamists in this case.
Do you think this smear campaign has come at you because of your warnings about Islamist organizations?
Absolutely. I've been smeared because CARE was objecting. In fact, it was the information CNN got from CARE. CARE has been circulating the idea that I was being paid all this money from the Homeland Security. CARE has been in the forefront, publishing articles about me speaking to the Homeland Security. And, of course, we also have a release from CARE itself saying that they influenced this case. That will be made public in the future. However, it is CARE's interest to silence groups like myself, Robert Spencer, Brigitte Gabrielle. CARE has been after those kind of people. They are after Joseph Farah, trying to break his back, the World Net Daily. They know it's a handful of organizations that are really spearheading the front, on the forefront, to basically destroy their arguments and destroy the Islamist arguments and the infiltration of the Islamists into this country.
Okay, so how do we know that your background is really what you say it is? Because you're kind of anonymous.
Well, it's very easy. People can go to my website and see United Nations reports. When I talk about my story, have been imprisoned, have been a terrorist, have been involved with a bomb maker in Jerusalem. These stories all can be verified because there's United Nations records. We have stories. We have even Christopher Hitchens, who talked about my bomb maker, Mahmoud al-Mughrabi. We have Edward Said. These are not right-wing groups that talked about my connections. These are left-wing groups. In fact, my bomb maker, Mahmoud al-Mughrabi, he was finally assassinated in Operation Wooden Leg. The Israelis sent an air force to bomb the central headquarters of Yasser Arafat. He was killed in that operation. Those are major stories that basically debunks all the claims that my story is inaccurate. My story doesn't stem only from my bombing operation. It also stems from my relationships. My cousin Arin Shoaibat, famous suicide bomber, She was the mastermind of Operation Rishon LeZion. People can click on a button and go to the websites, put them in Google Translate, find out they're true. My cousin Jawad Yunus, he was the attorney of Abu Zubaydah, who was one of the henchmen of Osama bin Laden. He is also an associate with Hezbollah, in which you can find the reports which I provided. I provide all the evidence. All what CNN provides is a testimony by someone who is linked to the terrorist apparatus, a fourth cousin of mine. He is in relationship with the Arin Shoaibat. How could that be a credible witness? CNN, if they do not provide any valuable evidence in their so-called hatchet job investigative reporting, they have no case.
Well, I know what kind of damage can occur with this kind of smear campaign because I've been banned in Britain. So what's the situation like this time? What are they trying to do to you?
Well, no one can tell at the moment. We're going to have to see in the future to see what happens as a result of this kind of smear campaign. But CNN have nothing in those reports. If, in fact, I urge people to watch the CNN report. If they look at the report itself, in these interviews, interviewed who? They have no interviews with any police official. They have no interviews with any government officials to basically debunk my story. Or any records, any calls they made with Bank Laomi, any correspondence, any email exchanges, they have nothing. In fact, It's impossible. Anyone can pick up the phone and call the Bank Leumi in Tel Aviv, and they can see for themselves. They got no records that talks about a terrorist attack in Bethlehem 30 years ago. Number two, it's impossible for CNN to examine my prison records. It's not easy to even examine the prison records in the Jerusalem Central Prison. You can try. It's impossible for another reason. My name is not Shoaibat when I was arrested. When I was arrested, I turned in my U.S. passport. It doesn't have the name Shoaibat. If people look carefully at that so-called hatchet job, you know, investigative reporting, which was a hatchet job, they can see very clearly. It's impossible to find anything under the name Shoaibat, because when I was arrested, I had a U.S. passport, and it didn't have the name Shoaibat. In fact, CNN were provided. We have emails. People can go to our website and see all the email exchanges we had with CNN. CNN made claims that they had repeated requests when they never had repeated requests with us. We've disclosed to them everything we know. We've disclosed to them that if they want to scrutinize the story further, we will show them documentation and documents that will basically satisfy their needs. When CNN found out that those documents will destroy their story, that's when CNN stopped collaborating with us and went along with the hatchet job story that they published.
Okay, so why should everyday Americans, such as my listeners, really care about this and your problems?
Well, the major concern when CNN begins to sue and attack is to silence freedom of speech. And that's the whole idea. If they can silence the critics of the Islamist movement, then they could win, and then they could use fear tactics in order to silence Americans from combating the Trojan horse activism that is infiltrated in our country. Look, we have Hillary Clinton, her aide Huma Abedin, her connection to her mother and her brother, who are very well connected in the Muslim Brotherhood arena. That is a person who could be very likely have infiltrated in high office in this country. So you look at the Muslim U.S. dialogue. The engagement of the U.S.-Muslim dialogue has been infiltrated by guess who? Of course, Faisal Abdul Rauf. Faisal Abdul Rauf was instrumental, the guy behind the Ground Zero Mosque, of writing policy, of making policy. In fact, it was Faisal Abdul Rauf who said, we need to change the policies of the U.S. We need to pressure the government agencies. We need to pressure politicians to make America Sharia compliant, to change the laws to make America Sharia compliant. Now, the term Sharia compliant, I didn't coin that. It was Faisal Abdul Rauf who coined that term.
Well, if the media is able to smear you and they're not held accountable for discrepancies like this, what kind of future do you foresee for the United States and the world?
If the U.S. does not wake up and to see the infiltration at high levels within the CIA, the FBI, government officials, federal workers, and if we don't filter people who are coming into the government system, to the State Department, they will set our policies for us. They will set the policies that will force many states that will not make Sharia illegal. You look at the Oklahoma situation, the forefront, whoever fights to say that Sharia should be illegal in this country would be the Council of American Islamic Relations. So we will be handing over our freedoms, and everything our forefathers died and bled for is for nothing. So it is the issue of freedom of speech in this country. To silence me, to silence World Net Daily, to silence Brother Michael Savage, is to silence the only voices, really, the few voices that are out there that are calling the Islamists what they are, that are criticizing Sharia laws, that are criticizing the infiltration. If that happens, if they succeed, then we've lost the war.
Well, Eid Shobat, we're glad you've joined us on the Savage Nation.
You bet. God bless you and God bless America.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
I think these patriotic Americans are willing to pitch in if they're asked, because they know that middle-class families shouldn't have to pick up the whole tab for closing the deficit. And this is a position that's being taken by people of both parties and no party. It's a position taken by Warren Buffett, somebody who knows about business and knows a little something about being wealthy.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199. 800-255-4199 or go to AmericaIsRising.com. 800-255-4199. AmericaIsRising.com. I spoke with a woman who expressed to me that there are people making a lot of money as unlicensed therapists by calling themselves coaches. And there's a huge void of, there's a huge need for this, apparently, in that people aren't going so much to hear what their psychological problems are as to get advice in their life, such as what to do with a job or what to do with a relationship or what to do with regard to, anything that comes up in a human life. And they don't have anyone to turn to. They may not have a father figure. They may not have a brother they can turn to, a husband, a lover. The male figure is gone, and I'm talking from a male perspective. I'm sure there are women doing very well in this. But the male coach, the male life coach, is an interesting phenomenon. How do you build a practice? I could do it overnight because I have a radio show. I don't want to do it. But on the other hand, it's an interesting concept. So I said that I'm going to let you have thousands of dollars worth of information for free. I'm going to play life coach, see how I do, and see if I give you advice worthwhile. So now make believe you're calling an 800 number, and you've paid your cost to whoever answers, whatever my fee might be. It would be very expensive, I'm sure, as much as any attorney gets, if not more. And I'm going to give you advice. I'm a life coach now, Michael Savage Life Coach. So let us begin with any caller. I mean, I have tremendous callers here. It's a fascinating interest, what's going on here, by the way. Spokane, Washington. D, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I'm 45, and I have been working as a nanny for the last 10 years and to put my daughter through college and private school. And now she's about ready to graduate, and then my son is going to go to college, but he's getting a scholarship. So I was interested in maybe going back to school, but I don't know, with the recession, do you think at my age, I don't know, I just need advice.
All right, well, that's an interesting question. How old are you?
I'm 45.
And you've been a nanny for 10 straight years?
Yes.
And when you say nanny, you mean for children? Because there are nannies who take care of older people now. I want to define carefully what you mean by that.
For children. There's three children, and they're...
All right. It's a very interesting question. Are you an American citizen?
Yes.
And may I ask you how much you're earning as a nanny?
Like $24,000 a year.
After 10 years. Okay, you're not making a lot of money. I think they're underpaying you, by the way. A manual laborer in San Francisco makes more money off the books than you're making, which is an embarrassment and an insult to this country. Manual workers doing ditch digging here make $20 an hour. Illegal aliens are getting $15 to $20 an hour in this city. So I can understand why you're thinking about it. However, going back to school is a long road. You're not going to make any money while you're in school. And there's no guarantee there's anything waiting for you when you come out. However, you are an expert in child care now. That's what you're an expert in, correct?
Yes, but I don't really want to go into that. My interests are interior design, photography, and stuff like that.
All right, here's a big thing. Don't confuse an avocation with a vocation. This is a common mistake that people make. In other words, in America, in the heyday, when everybody could do anything they wanted and make a living, the advice was follow your loves, follow what you like, and you know the world will follow. It's not true anymore. The chances of you making money as an interior designer or a photographer are very low because these fields are filled with very talented people who have been around a long time who are suffering right now as a result of the downturn in the economy, and they're not making a living themselves. You can do those things as a hobby. I would not recommend you do them as a career. If you want to make more money, I would stick to what you know best, which is child care. So in other words, I'm not telling you to leave your field. I'm telling you to work smarter. Don't just be a nanny for a family. Why don't you set up a child care facility and get other children into the child care facility, and then hire people to work for you in this child care facility so you become an owner, manager, boss. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yes.
That would be my advice, and I can't give you any further advice at that point. Denver, Colorado, this is Michael Savage, Life Coach. Joe, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Yeah, hi, Michael. I've been doing some painting last maybe 10 years, artist kind of painting, and since my dog died, I've lost that kind of creative desire. I still want to, but like there's this like emptiness.
Yeah.
So I'm not really pursuing it very much. There's a desire, but there's no real no motive.
But when your dog was alive, your dog was your only inspiration for your painting?
Well, no, he filled a real void. So when
The logical answer is get another dog. I mean, you know, it's like saying it's not going to be the same, but eventually you'll bond with that animal, and you'll come to love that other animal, and maybe this spark of desire to live again will come back. You are grieving. You are in bereavement, the same as if a person loses a friend or a parent or a child, God forbid, or a mate. You're going through the same exact grieving process. This is why you're not painting anymore.
Right, but you don't get another kid or another parent. It's kind of like...
I understand that, but listen, you can't just get another kid or another parent, but you can get another dog. That dog is gone. That dog is in another world. And all of the crying and all of the what you're doing over the dog is not doing you any good, is it?
No, because I've kind of been drinking a little bit.
Well, all right, so you're drinking. There's no shame in that either. I mean, the alcohol was discovered for a reason. But there's a limit to that, okay? You need to get a dog in your life if that's what you love. I mean, is a dog what you love? Dog was what you loved?
Well, it was this particular dog.
I understand, but there's not going to be the same dog, but there's going to be some other animal that's going to come in your life if you like animals. So what kind of dog was it?
He was a a beagle-foxhound mix.
But, Joe, if you go to a local pound where they're euthanizing animals every day, beautiful little animals, beautiful little friends, waiting for someone to just take them in and do anything for them, all they want is your love, Joe. You're going to find a dog that might look like the one you had. And, of course, at first it's going to be strange. It's like coming home with a new girlfriend. I mean, you know, you can't suddenly fall in love with someone because she's a girl. You have to have a relationship with that individual. It's the same with an animal. You'll build it up. You know, you take him for a walk. You give him food. You throw him a bone. You throw him a toy. You rub him a little bit. And before long, you're creating a bond with that animal, Joe, and you're going to have the same feelings again. Again, that's the only advice I can give you at this time. How's my driving? Call 1-800-SAVAGE. No, I'm very good at this. I know it. I'm like the uncle of the nation. I know that. Everyone knows that I know what I'm talking about. They can tell by my political analysis that I'm right. And as far as life analysis, I'm giving you advice through the airwaves, okay? So where do I have the audacity to tell you that I know what would be best for you? It comes from the feeling that there's common sense in the world and there's a lack of common sense in the world. And I believe that I have been gifted with common sense. It was ingrained in me. It was taught to me. My father was a very commonsensical man. He taught me how to think for myself.